This week, investors bought up U.S. equities at discounts and picked up precious metals. And Bitcoin retested support around 4,400. Welcome back, everyone. It's just great to be with you. We have another big show for you and two industry insiders, plus the Q&A segment where we open up the phone line. Bitcoin remains red hot, and so do the precious metals. Arch Crawford, head of Crawford Perspectives, joins the show. He sees a U.S. equities correction into September and October, but thinks that the gold market could stage a powerful advance. Just two daily closes over 1,300. That's all he needs to go all in on the yellow metal. And Bob Hoy and I discuss Elliott Wave analysis on Bitcoin and the potential for 5,000, 10,000, 50,000 and higher for the cryptocurrency phenomenon. Just what does the blockchain revolution mean for most of us here? Is this the big sea change event? Plus, we'd like for you to sign up for the Alpha Stocks newsletter. I'm still offering free gift tokens of my favorite four cryptocurrencies for new subscribers. And Robert Ian wraps up the show with his latest report. And we'd like to field your questions and comments. The number 1-641-715-3900, followed by extension 514049. We'd like for you to jot it down, please, on a notepad and or plug it right into your phone. Gold Seek Radio begins now with a market weather recap. Visibility virtually unlimited over the precious metals this week on continued weakness in the greenback following little guidance from the annual Jackson Hole, Wyoming Economic Symposium. Gold picked up about $6, finishing just shy of $1,300 yet again at $1,298. Silver added 5 cents, finishing at $1,705 an ounce, while the XAU shares added 2 points at 2%, finishing at $85.82. Black gold gave back 80 cents, finishing at $48, just below the moving average. Nevertheless, crude inventories fell by about 3.3 million from the previous week. The top story moving the precious metals this week, news of wild price volatility ahead of the talk at the Jackson Hole, Wyoming meeting. Federal Reserve Chair Janet Yellen addressed policymakers, but just before that, Fed Bank Dallas President Robert Kaplan gave a speech saying the central bank can be patient on raising interest rates. According to the St. Louis Fed Funds futures contracts, there's virtually no odds of a rate hike, at least until next summer. In fact, if sentiment remains static, there could be no rate hikes at all. Precious metals bottom line. Well, clearly the CRB is showing signs now of two consecutive weekly floors, and that might be a good sign for the metals, which look primed, at least from a technical vantage point, for a big rally. I wouldn't be surprised to see silver on a breakout run to 21 here and gold to test 1,500. Moving on to the Wall Street Report, visibility virtually unlimited over the New York Stock Exchange. The Dow Jones added 140 points, closing at 21,813, while the S&P 500 picked up 18 points at 2443 for the week, while the NASDAQ picked up 50 at 6265. And the Bitcoin ETF added 7%, 51 points, closing just shy of 800. It was just under 100 when we first started following it here about a year ago, less than a year ago. And the Komodo coin, the anonymous Bitcoin, KMD, finished near break even around 133. Meanwhile, durable goods fell by the largest amount in about 3 years. The 7% drop in July was blamed on volatile aircraft sales. However, new home sales fell about 6.4%, but not as bad as expected by economists. The lackluster news was seen as something of a stalemate, a Goldilocks scenario where the domestic economic engine is running not too hot, not too cold, but just right. And it was a good environment for Adamas Pharmaceuticals. ADMS was up 40% after the U.S. Food and Drug Administration late Thursday approved its treatment for Parkinson's. In addition, the Dollar Tree DLTR climbed over 2% after Raymond James upgraded the stock to a strong buy. Airlines were solid, with American Airlines up 5.5%, Southwest Airlines up about 4%, and a favorite of the Alpha Stocks newsletter, Delta Airlines, up about 3.3%. DAL is the ticker there. Bottom line on U.S. equities. Well, our favorite indicator, greed to fear index, finally reached extremely fearful levels, suggesting that during this orderly retreat, we might just find a floor in the next week or so where the bulls attempt to move equities to new record highs. Coming up after the break, more Goldseek Radio. Well, my featured guest today, Arch Crawford, combines technical analysis with the planetary alignments, astronomical anomalies, to help identify patterns in the markets. Arch has been at the helm of Crawford Perspectives for over 4 decades and was recently on Fox News again, I believe, with Neil Cavuto. Welcome back, Arch.
Delighted to be here.
Give us some of the details, if you don't mind, of your talk with Neil Cavuto.
Well, the funny thing is he was talking about the trip, he mentioned my name earlier in this day and said, the late, great Arch Crawford, and two of my friends and subscribers immediately called and emailed me Neil Cavuto just said I was dead.
As you mentioned before the show, the reports of your demise were greatly exaggerated. You know, Arch, I'm so glad to hear that you sound even better than the last time we chatted with you. I guess your wife is taking excellent care of, they have to be saints to put up with us, I believe. But nevertheless, Arch, we did want to discuss the topic du jour, and of course that's the solar eclipse. Really bizarre here. It looked like things were getting a little overcast and then it would get sunny again, and because we had the addition of clouds to the whole solar event near the Asheville, North Carolina area, the lights went out. There was a black light effect all around the woods in this very remote provincial area.
How powerful these things are, and that has to do, that is naturally measuring the closeness of the alignments and also how near and far they are, such that if you have a new moon or full moon that's close enough for an eclipse, and then you also have it with the moon nearer the Earth, that's about as high a tidal forces you're going to get. And people don't think about it, but the tides go in and out, but the greater tide is in the air. And John Nelson and I used to talk about this, that the greatest amplitudes occur when there is actually solar flares and activity from the sun that's hyping up the solar flux, tends to be electrons, protons, x-rays, gamma rays, and whatever physical chunks will come out of the sun. This one is, I think, the tightest one in at least 100 years. And I think Armstrong was just writing that it was the most important one since like 2 days after the signing of the Declaration of Independence. And there was an earthquake somewhere near the path that toppled some. Actually, I don't remember what it was. It's in the journal, Wall Street Journal, this morning. And it's a minor, fairly minor event. I think one person was killed and some others wounded. And they were still trying to dig some people out from buildings that had collapsed. But I remember one that went over Ba'ad, the Middle East, the city of Ba'ad, and killed about 36,000 of them the day of the eclipse, or the day after. It was 2 or 3 days after, or it was on the day of. That's tidal force for you. That's not mystical energy. But in this, the tidal force, if the sun is also putting out strong electromagnetically charged particles, the tidal force will bring them down closer to the Earth, and that is what makes men mad. Charged ionized particles from the sun coming very close to the Earth because of the tidal force. Mythology is very important, and the zodiac and the early astrology is very important to it, and all scientists were astrologers first up until about 300 to 400 years ago. The dynamics of planetary movement were to be able to pinpoint where the planet is to determine the meaning of what it is going to cause on the Earth, the very basis of our science. I don't know how far it's gone. It's I think it's been too much shut off, that the Rosetta Stone is the Chinese Book of Changes, the I Ching, which I think was written down about 3,600 years ago, and it's all dit-da-dit, positives and negatives. I also wanted to mention a little more about eclipses. An eclipse went all the way across Russia, the way ours did yesterday, in 2008. And 4 days later, they attacked Georgia. Princess died within 24 hours of the Challenger. It looks like it's something like the exploding. And since the month before, they had had terrorist activity at the Olympics. I said, watch out for terrorist activity on January the 28th. Diana, I had looked at some complex planetary alignment, which one of my books said, Tragic Love, Socially Awkward, and I put that in the newsletter exactly the way it said it. Tragic Love, Socially Awkward, the 30th of September, 30th of August, 31st of August, something like that. It was, I don't remember the date, but it was the within 24 hours of the solar eclipse.
It looks like there really is some type of tie-in here. I think we live in such an interconnected world. Are we drawing false parallels? Or is there more greater ionization due to gravitational shifts and planetary alignments? Could easily be behind much of the lunacy, i.e. Luna, i.e. the moon, the solar anomalies tend to coincide with much greater anxiety, aggression here on the Earth. I mean, you pointed that out for the last 10 years.
Hit a 6 this morning on the Earth magnetic field change, disturbed up to 6 out of 9. And that's the first time since, I think, May.
We've seen just some radical moves in the U.S. equities market. People calling the top here. I know many analysts who have been calling the top since it started. This bull run started in 2009. Give us an idea of what Crawford Perspectives sees here.
Well, Crawford Perspectives suggests that there's a downside continuation sometime in the next 2 months. I had said in the newsletter I expected a 4.5 to 8.5%. Decline, but that after whatever low we get in late September or October, that it will have a very strong rally up into December, and I expect the long-term top to be December or January.
Let's move on then to the precious metals. You know, been subdued for quite some time. Charts looking much better. We're starting to see what looks like cup and handles and bullish inverted head and shoulders, but tend to coincide with better prices. Any thoughts?
Well, right now we're looking at a slightly broadening pattern, but it's not enough to really call it a broadening pattern, perhaps. But we went up to like close to 1,300, and then we went down to about 1217 or so, back up to a little over 1300, and then back down to 1205 or 6 in the Dow. I'm talking about Dow. And we just came back up and hit those prior highs again, spiked through them 4 trading days ago, but lost the entire game and closed on the low. Lost the entire gain and closed on the low of the day, suggesting a one-day reversal to the negative side. So I'm still cautious about it until I see a solid break above 1300 with a close or two closes above 1300. And then I think the sky is the limit because so many things are getting out of control in the world economic and particularly monetary.
Let's say that we do get that solid two-day close above. We don't see key reversals, you know, signs of accumulation. It probably wouldn't last there long because so many folks would jump on that. What would be your target, assuming the yellow metal closes solidly above that 1,300 resistance with some enthusiasm? Are we looking for 1,400, 1,500?
Well, as I said, the sky's the limit because we've been in this downtrend since the top at 1920 price level. It spiked above it very briefly and came back out a couple of months ago. And then it came back above it again, which is still above it. The 50-day moving average, the 50-week moving average has gone above the 200 moving average, but barely, and it's a range of lows from the previous highs around 1500 to 1550, but I would say that's to 1420, and it's going to 1550.
And then moving on to the cryptocurrencies, you know, the Bitcoin phenomenon, really quite a remarkable market. I'm sure you've probably kept at least one eye, or at least peripheral vision on this. I mean, what a neat story, even if you're not a subscriber, as I'm a complete convert on the cryptocurrencies. At first, I was probably the world's biggest skeptic. How can this be something? Well, frankly, there's a lot of intrinsic value, which I can't say for unbacked paper and coin money.
That what we've been thinking of as real money is just paper.
Do you agree that the cryptos, unfortunately for us precious metals investors, have likely shifted the focus of many millions of people away from the more traditional store of value because of the versatility, because of the uniqueness and characteristics and options and things of that nature, that there's over 100 primary altcoins, they call them now, alternatives. The biggest one is Ethereum, which is soaring as of our discussion today on news that it's going to have a hard fork, which doesn't sound terribly appealing, but all that means is that it's sort of a splitting of the underlying blockchain, and that of course allows for greater functionality, lower cost, ease of use. And we saw something similar with the Bitcash fork with Bitcoin. Now what I've noticed is it tends to be negatively correlated with Bitcoin. So as Bitcoin declines, Bitcash rises and vice versa. Well, we're having something similar with Ethereum. So folks are kind of scrambling to pick up the Ethereum so that they can have whatever Ether cash, Ethercoin or whatever afterwards. You know, obviously people see this as an alternative financial vehicle and safe haven that at least currently is outside the jurisdiction of most nations.
I like it for that reason. On that last run up, prior to this one, it peaked out on an important full moon on top of a possible pullback further, which it got immediately to that last top.
As we wrap up, any closing thoughts or comments for our investors today?
Well, I'm still looking for, in the general market, go lower into and bottom in late September or October, and then a very, very sharp rally up into December, and a major top there in December, January, followed by a pretty bad year next year, and it may be okay in the first half, but particularly the second half, I believe, will see major downsides. And we could get at any time, I mean, I'm concerned near term about the raise of the debt limit under such hostile circumstances. If they're going to be able to hold hands long enough to get it done.
Yeah, the debt ceiling has certainly been a big issue in the past, but it was always navigated. And I think the point you're making here is a valid one, because with all of the political turmoil, that might just culminate with delays and perhaps even worse on the raising of the debt ceiling. Would that bring government to a screeching halt, at least temporarily? And what might be the ramifications for the current administration?
I saw a poll that's been done that was relatively low on the poll, lower than it is with me.
Arch, it's always fun hearing your thoughts. We appreciate you making time for us today. And as we wrap up, it would just be great if you could tell people more about Crawford Perspectives.
Well, Crawford Perspectives has been predicting stocks and gold and bonds and interest rates and some currency for 40 years as of last May. And we've been number one on the stock market for quite a number of years. And number one in the gold a couple of times, and the number one in the bonds for a couple of times. So we would like to hear from you in terms of subscriptions. It's $250, the same as it was in 1977. And you can find us at Crawford Perspectives online, or you can just Google Arch Crawford, and it'll be the first or second one that comes up.
The selling point here today, Arch, given the inflation since over the last 40 years, you can actually pick up Crawford Perspective today at probably 66 to 70% discount over the original price.
It could be. You know, the days of 99 and 2000 were I think, the internal high of this market because...
But when adjusted properly for inflation, when you look at it from that perspective, I mean, we may not even have anything but nominal gains. There's no real gains here at all.
Do these things in order to protect yourself against your government and the unconstitutional organizations that they have given power to. Plenty of up there that says that we are going to shake in various different ways. So I'm sure it will cover any...
Hey, listen, you and your wife have the best day, okay?
Okay, will do. Bye-bye.
Well, it's just a pleasure to welcome back Bob Hoy, the institutional advisor here. He's advised clients 3 decades, editor, chief investment strategist. Welcome back, Bob Hoy.
Hi, Chris. Good to be with you.
Great to have you back with us today. And, you know, the topic du jour, I don't think I even need to mention it.
It's the thing that's going straight up.
Yeah, Bitcoin. We're actually looking for a correction back to 3650.
Yeah, you may be. But what my colleague, Ross Clark, on the technical side, is brilliant on charting. And so what we have been doing over the last few months is time to time updated the action in Bitcoin in 1980, for example, or Nikkei in 89. And you have a long saucer bottom, then you have various breakouts and swings so that you end up counting them. And by the time you get out to the 22 to 23 correction, that's 0.22 to 0.23, then you get to the point where it goes straight up, and that's the ending action on it. So we are, it is built similar to gold on the blow off to 1980, or one could use silver when it went up to $50. It's a similar pattern. And as I said, the count out so far on the swings is now to the point where it goes straight up and it's the ending thrust, for then afterwards a real serious setback. So, hey, it's very exciting to be watching it. It's also worthwhile to be watching it in, Chris, let's say, an analytical.
We see a very, very different thing occurring here, Bob. Normally, I'd be on board with your analyst. We've got one brilliant analyst from London, probably the best technical analyst, and he does it honestly just to help people. He won't accept money. He uses the Elliott wave analysis, which I've never been a big proponent. Tried it for a few years, but what always disturbed me was the fact that the patterns, the waves, were not static. They were always changing, so it was always open to interpretation.
That's the word on Elliott. We have, decades ago, took a look at it, and then you've got to interpret.
I'm a convert, and he sees a 3650 here on Bitcoin before the next launch to near 5,000. Big consolidation en route to 10,000, and then a final big push to 50,000. What we see happening here is a massive sea change. When we first started following this story, it was the market cap on the crypto space, let's just say Bitcoin, was roughly $80 billion. It's skyrocketed to almost $150 billion today. We think this is a $5 trillion market. That means that within the next 10 years or less, we'll see Forex-style trading on the exchange. In other words, we think it will even rival the Forex. This is going to topple governments. The old way of doing transaction and businesses is giving way to triple book accounting. We know our debits and our credits, right? Our typical accounting method. And we all know, you know, the old English way of stock. You know, the stock came from just breaking a stick in half. And then you got one half and the lender had the other half of the stick and you brought the notches back together and you no longer owned, right? You traded in your shares. Well, today there's been that big of a shift from, you know, the old stock to electronic trading and now this. That's what the blockchain amounts to. And if we're even marginally right here, you're going to have a minimum of 50,000 on Bitcoin and 100,000. I personally think the biggest opportunity going forward is Ethereum. And I do want to throw this proviso in here. I do think this current run is finished, meaning we could bounce back up to 44, 41, but I think you're going to have to test 36 to 3650 if his work, this Elliott wave analyst. By the way, you know, one thing I've noticed about Elliott, even though I still don't subscribe, Bob, every single person I know who's rich beyond the dreams of avarice, they use Elliott wave analysis. Robert Prechter of the Elliott Wave Institute.
Yeah, well, all I can say is that there's a certain dynamic in a great, huge blow-off. And so far, the Bitcoin has followed that pattern. And as I said, it's the latest rally up to a point, 0.23. Sorry, we're one further on. And 0.24, and that on the gold chart, 1973 to 1980, shows up on the correction from 450 down to 350. And then now this latest correction of, that was May into July on the Bitcoin. Now doing 23 and 24 sets you up for the final thrust. Now we don't know how high it can be, but whatever it gets to on this thrust is likely the concluding for the move. And it we don't know how long it's going to last by way of months or weeks or how big a jump it will be, but it will be quite likely the concluding one. That's profound. But as I can say, I'm looking at this starts with a saucer pattern of 1 to 2, 3 to 4, all these swings with various resistance lines and averages and everything else, right out to 23 and 24 with the, now also within this, Chris, we have our own proprietary model, which is at highs does what we call an upside exhaustion. So on each of these moves, like out to 23, which was the last, that high in May, that was, had an upside exhaustion, and it comes down to an oversold or support on a trailing average. Then now we're into, as I said, this is the end of the world move. It is into the straight up and concluding move. And then to repeat, Chris, no idea how far or how long it will take, but it is there. It is in this now pattern. With that took gold from 450 to the 850 or whatever it was in 1980. And we've also compared it, what's the other one, Bitcoin here to the, more recently, like the Shanghai Composite, 2001 to 2007, and then, oh, even to the marijuana stocks. We compared it to the Canopy Growth Corp. Weed.
Yeah.
The move is going to be the biggest ever, and most straight up. But we have the dispassion to realize that this would be a concluding move to December 1979 and then going into January 1980. They were all wild then about the gold-silver ratio, and its rightful level was 16, and the Hunt brothers promoting it. And they did get it down to 16, but even then it was hard to calculate because what did you use? Handy Harmon price for silver or the close on the COMEX? I mean, it was wild days then, Chris. Cryptocurrencies are going to become more and more and more important because somewhere the real world of commerce and finance has to come up with a currency that is non-government. The world needs a sound currency. How it gets there, we don't know, but it will get there. And this whole business of government intervention, at least on the central bank side, is going to be seriously questioned and condemned, and then it'll spread. I mean, you get into a credit contraction this fall, and everything to this week in our review of the credit market says, yeah, we are on the path to an incredible reversal. Also, Chris, in order to make sure that the street doesn't think we're perma bears, the last few weeks pieces have been headlined, is the market up when it should be? Yeah. And that would include base metals, the rising of short rates like the T-bill rate. Now it's reversing. The T-bill rate got up to 1.18% a few weeks ago. and became very overbought and is now down to 101%. But the importance is that in May of 1929, the T-bill rate rose, went right on up, and then reversed and was declining, and it was down a long ways by the time the Federal Reserve got around to cutting its administered rate in October of 1929. So here we are now, the T-bill rate's going down. Now, what does that tell us? It says that it reflects that the speculative demand for money, like money for speculators to be long or short or whatever they're trading, could be diminishing. Now, on the other side of the equation, the scare, you know, the very careful money, when you go into a financial storm, you're not looking for a return at all. You just want to put it in a place where you can get it back. And that is the most liquid item, which is U.S. Treasury bills. And the other liquid item is gold. So 3-month Treasury bill rate coming down is telling us that the contraction is still on schedule. So, and also I think that when you have had such a fantastic bull market in so many assets, there's a count to this, Chris. And this research I noticed in the 1970s, as a matter of fact, I was the first one to discover it and actually the only one that stayed with it, is that on any of the great big bull markets, then it was 1929 with the New York market, the world experienced a huge bubble and blow off in commodities in 1920. And the crash down in 1921 was horrendous. But 9 years later, you had the Dow blowout in 1929. So then I thought, oh, well, we all knew about the South Sea bubble that blew out in 1720. So I go back, and by this time there was Phelps and Dodge, I think it was, it had come up with the price index going back to 700 years of the price of consumables. So at any rate, oh, there it was. 1711, a huge boom in commodities ended. 9 years later, 1720, you had the stock bubble. So then I thought, well, there must be some stock bubbles in between, and there was one in 1772, 9 years after a commodity boom. 1770, yeah, then the next one was really huge, 1825, that was a big bubble, and the commodities peaked 9 years earlier. Then you move out to the 1873 bubble in stocks, and it was 9 years after a CPI high in 1864. So there's a pattern there. And then we want to bring this up to date, Chris. And you had the clearly recognized bubble in 2000 with the dot-com phenomena, but it wasn't 9 years after a commodity peak. And then you had the big boom in 2007, that one was great. I thought that everything was in for a classic bubble, and that it would be, pretty hard sailing afterwards. And yeah, the initial crash was, the establishment reported, the worst since the 1930s. But here we are now, another fabulous bubble, including the biggest bubble in bonds ever, and including pretty good action in commodities. Industrial commodities have been firm lately. You've got a great retail housing bubble going on. High-end housing has perhaps peaked. So you got a lot of assets in play. And so here's the way I've looked at it, Chris, is that if you had signs of great speculation this year, in the ninth year after a great big peak in commodities, which was 2008, remember crude oil up at $147? Now the troops get excited if it gets up to 47. There's much to be said for this historical stuff. And to get this around to the cyber coins is that it is a great bubble within itself, but within a year, where great financial excitement could blow out. So that's our way of looking at it. It's sort of on a historical researcher basis. And then my colleague Ross, with his charting, you can't help but say, oh, now how does this look like compared to crude oil or compared to the silver or gold in 1980 or the Shanghai in 2007? You know, so there's all kinds of examples of blow-offs. So well, I'm content to kind of watch this go. And as I said, we also had firming industrial commodity prices into August, and crude oil made that high of 50 and a bit at the first of the month, so hey, close enough. But industrial, the base metals continue to rally. Zinc is up to the highest it's been since 2007. That was an interesting year. And we just put one out yesterday on copper, where it looks like it could enjoy another leg up. And so, you know, if you get continued rise in metal prices for the next few weeks, that's going to add to the party in most everything. And it's quite likely that the Cybercoin, on its pattern, as I said, Chris, it is into the straight up, which could be the concluding thrust on the whole.
Firstly, you might recall that Ross's comments, with all due respect, I mean, a remarkable individual, we were near 2,000 on Bitcoin, and the institutional advisor folks felt that was kind of a blow-off peak, and I really felt that you might be right, but this might be the opening. Well, you know, we've doubled, more than doubled.
The one we published a few months ago, when it rallied up to 1,500 or a bit more than that, that was 0.21, then corrected to 22. And then in a pattern where on the point count, you go to 23, and that was in May. We've had the correction, so that was 24. So the action for the last 3 months has been within the model that compares to gold on the way to 800. So, but all I'm saying is that we've done, that was went back on the correction, 21 to 22, and now we've had the correction 23 to 24, and now this calls for straight up.
China, Russia, many, many nations around the world are scrambling to play catch-up because they realize a sea change has just occurred. Everyone says a paper dollar has no intrinsic value. Well, that's nonsense. There's lots of value there to print up the plates and print out this money and the ink and the special ribbons in it and all this. So let's just say each dollar has an intrinsic value of maybe a penny. Bitcoins are limited to 21 million. People are waking up to the idea, and this is going to I'm going to get nasty grams for this, but it's true. Bitcoin is literally digital gold. It has a limited supply. It is at the top of the heap. There's Ethereum that equates to silver. It has amazing functionality. There are ways to make it non-traceable using Komodo, which I'm a huge proponent, KMD if people are interested. Every single Bitcoin is accounted for. You're seeing 10 years in the future. Yes, it has hurt the precious metals for about 5 years. Gold and silver have been subdued for the last 5 years. And it eventually will send precious metals much, much higher. And we think we're on the cusp of a silver and gold breakout. You only can participate in many of these amazing companies that are being offered. We're following two or three right now. If you own Bitcoins, but you can't buy Bitcoins easily in the United States, which is where most of the world's wealth is tied up. Now, what happened when they just unleashed the lion in Tokyo? Bitcoin doubled, all because of the fact there's $3 trillion in pension funds, at least now, in Tokyo. Eventually, the United States will have to comply. Eventually, the U.S. will have no choice. They'll recognize it. We've got 3 to 5 years of parabolic growth you will see in this market, which, of course, will be punctuated by 50% haircuts.
Chris, that's a great dissertation on it, but we are in agreement. One, the world needs a proper currency, and somehow out of this will derive a proper currency. Then also on the action in price, we reached 22 and 23, or 23 and the 24 swing, from which it goes straight up. So we're in agreement.
I read a brilliant article on Zero Hedge last week. The reason why the banks and the institutions will always be so far behind on this crypto revolution is, A, they're the Titanic. They're slow to react, and they are built on a web of relationships, i.e. people who they bumped elbows with. That's how they keep their power centralized. This opens up the door, 7 billion people to engage in electronic commerce. The genie's out of the bottle here. This is the end of centralized power. I mean, you've been on this show for years pounding the table. Yeah, you're very anti-authoritarian.
The public will choose what it will transact in. And the central bankers are going to get buried. And their theories, it is going to collapse. So the public is attempting to take over self-governing again from experts, a popular uprising that is being seen in Brexit in Europe and England, and with the incredible struggles going on in the United States in the political arena now. So, but this is trying to get control of the apparatus of government out of the hands of authoritarian experts, and it will also require defining what money is.
I don't think I could have said it any better than what you just said. The public is taking back the power. But how about elections? When has there not been election fraud? I can't remember when that wasn't a key component of a major presidential election, at the very least, over the last 2 decades. How hard would it be to set up a blockchain-based voting system with 100% assurance your login is just yours, and you only get one vote, and you'd have the IP address of everybody, and it's on a triple entry accounting, which means it's verifiable? I'm trying to say that 90% of government waste, pork, eliminated just by the blockchain system alone.
Oh, there was a study a week ago, Chris, that showed that the voter rolls are about 3 million more than actual people. Yeah, but I might not have phrased that right, but that's the way I read that, that on the voter registration in many of the electoral districts, there are more registered than actual voters.
Yeah, any parting comments?
We got to talk about gold. In a big stock boom like we've been in now, the real price of gold goes down, and it has been down and drifting. And until the real, that's like compared to the producer price index or the CPI, until it starts to go up, forget about gold stocks. But at the end of every great boom in the past, the first 3 years after the bubble ends, the real price of gold goes up. So we're going to go back into a gold market, a market for gold stocks at some point.
A silver lining there that makes everybody happy. It'll be really interesting to see how this Bitcoin drama plays out.
You're on top of it, and I admire you for grasping it when you did. And good then, Chris. Yep, bye-bye.
Time for another listener's Q&A segment here today. Opening up the digital phone line.
Yeah, hi, Chris. This is Paul in Alexandria, Virginia. I am curious about the manipulation of gold prices. We've heard for a number of years from several experts that gold is the investment to watch and that it's going to go much higher due to quantitative easing and a number of other factors. However, on the other hand, we know that it's being manipulated to hold prices down. There are some folks who say that there's going to be an unavoidable rise in the price, and I'm wondering how they can make this claim, what they base it on, given the fact that there's been so much success in suppressing prices for so long. On the other hand, you also have people like Martin Armstrong who call for a serious decrease in prices, as low as 800, I believe he said. So I'm wondering how you can explain the sentiment regarding the manipulation of gold prices and whether that can go on indefinitely. Thank you very much. Bye.
Well, the first caller has heard of the precious metals market manipulation narrative and would like to know just how this occurs and will it send prices higher or lower? Well, hi, caller. You know, the precious metals suppression scheme, I think it's pretty well established. I mean, the Gotta.org folks have been on top of this for really about two decades. Chris Powell, Bill Murphy, they presented their case here regularly every year for the 12 years we've been on the air. They presented it as well to the highest levels of government. And, you know, the top Wall Street investment banks have settled, I would say, hundreds of millions of dollars at least so far. So this is a true story. In addition, the central banks regularly dump hundreds, even thousands of tons of bullion reserves, sometimes directly on the open market. That would be similar to the U.S. Fed selling huge positions of Google or IBM. I mean, can you imagine the backlash that would incur? Now, while I agree that it's likely that there is collusion holding prices low, here's an interesting question. Does it really matter? I mean, after all, if prices are suppressed, any Econ 101 student knows that market forces will inevitably win out and supply and demand will simply force prices to their natural equilibrium level, right? In other words, you can't hold prices down forever and you can't keep a good market down. So it seems to me like this is a problem for the short-term trader, is it not? Not the long-term investor. Those of us out here who believe that no matter what the manipulators try to do to the markets, in the long term, we're all going to win. And I'd like to add to this that our current market take on the precious metals is we're gearing up the next big leg higher. This looks like a great opportunity. It seems to be moving in tandem almost with the cryptocurrency phenomenon, U.S. equities. Have had quite a run over the past couple years, you know, eight solid years. One of the most powerful and forceful advances in the 120-year Dow history. We think investors are now going to start to lock in some profits in their bond market, which is also a bubble, and the U.S. equities market will not necessarily top out here, but I think some of the smart money is realizing the relative advantage, the relative opportunity, the relative valuation opportunity level in gold versus equities and bonds. So we think it bodes well for the precious metals and better days ahead.
This is really not a Q&A segment question. I've tried to subscribe to your newsletter on a monthly basis, and I put all the numbers in the prescribed little places in my cell phone presentation, used PayPal and all that sort of thing, and I can't seem to get any kind of more direction on where to go, or have got any feedback from my attempts. If you could give me some assist there, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay. Hi, caller. You know, this is a common issue that occurs when people sign up using their PayPal account, but then forget that the PayPal email address is no longer checked very regularly, or maybe been deactivated altogether. This happens all the time. And so, see, this is my only way to contact new subscribers. The email address attached to the PayPal account. That's what we're given. So if you wouldn't mind just sending an email message to me at gsradio@frontier.com. That's gsradio, all one word, @frontier.com. And we should be able to clear everything up for you today. Thank you.
I just have a comment. I wanted to thank you for the guest, John Scursey. I understood everything he said. He explained everything very well. He was a wonderful guest, and I thank you for everything you do also. But, I just wanted to comment that that was an especially effective interview. Thank you very much.
Moving on to the next guest, he liked the interview with John Scursey. Thanks, caller. I'm so glad you appreciated that, and we'll look forward to hearing from his folks and perhaps having him back on the show.
Well, I just wanted to mention that the last, month or two, about 50% of the interviews, I can't, the sound quality is so bad, I can't listen. And I know that's not your fault. Sometimes the person who's being interviewed comes in on a, different type of technology, or who knows how they, or Skype or something. But, I mean, I'm a good listener. I'm an auditory learner, in fact, and I can't, I can't sit there and so that there's no sounds at all and then concentrate on every word. I just can't do that for 30 minutes, so just thought you might want to know about that. Thank you.
Well, listener, there are several good explanations for this. I've been putting this dog and pony act together for 12 years now, and I recognize when sound quality is subpar. First, I'll take some of the blame for this. We were forced to move into a very rural place temporarily for about 5 months. The phone lines were over 50 years old there, underground, so we're no longer in that house. I have very little control over the guest's microphone. I usually, if I hear something odd when we begin an interview, I will suggest, well, let's switch over to a landline, you know, or let's switch away from a cell phone. But really, very few instances will facilitate better audio. Most people are usually stuck with a mobile, and mobiles, for the most part, really are one of the worst ways to do an interview, because once that audio goes into our studio equipment, it amplifies the low quality and noise significantly. So there's really nothing I can do about that, and we're not set up here for ISDN BRI level. We have had that in the past, and of course it's perfect audio regardless of the caller. But now that we're in this new place that has, you know, DSL level phone service, at least for the next 7 or so months, we hope to bring you really high quality interviews. And I think you'll notice the past few have been really some of the best in years. So we look forward to bringing you near studio quality audio.
Hey Chris, just a heads up that the Bitcoin receiving address on your homepage is not a valid Bitcoin address. That's all. Bye.
All right. The next caller says Bitcoin address is incorrecto. Well, you know what? I've got a new address. I'll post it up there, and I appreciate you bringing that to my attention.
Hi, Chris. Calling here from San Francisco, listening to your show right now. I've been listening to it since you guys have been doing this. And, you know, I've never called. I just wanted to call and say thanks, man. I enjoy listening to your voice. I enjoy, coming to the office on Mondays, running the show while I take care of my Monday responsibilities and duties here in the office. And, you know, keeping tuned in, man. You're a smart guy. You got a lot going on, and I appreciate you sharing your wisdom with me and everybody else who listens to you. You know, you do a good job and keep it up. That's all I wanted to say. Good vibes from San Francisco. Take care.
Wow, what a really great thing to say. We appreciate that, and we appreciate all our callers today. Remember, you can call in to our toll-free number. We try to get to them as regularly as possible, and you can do so 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Plus, you can just send an email message to me, gsradio@frontier.com. Coming up after the break, more Gold Seek.
GoldSeek.com Radio. Unbeknownst to most, a byproduct is forming across the current political, financial, and social landscape in response to the endless, irresponsible rhetoric emanating from many hopefully soon-to-be-retired establishment political figures of all stripes. Whether they are fanning the flames of collusion, unrest, sour grapes, or simply suffering from the not-invented-here syndrome, in the hopes that implementation of certain good ideas can be delayed and eventually credited to other leaders or parties, major imbalances continue to accrue in the not-so-transparent background that are by design compounding one of the most dangerous and debilitating byproducts of our information age. And that byproduct is confusion. A confused mind does nothing. It procrastinates, it hesitates, it fails to make decisions and take much-needed actions, not only for its own survival and betterment, but for the survival and betterment of all. Dying of thirst in the middle of the information ocean because of biased reporting, digital censorship algorithms, and skewed polling that attempts to reshape public opinion instead of reflect it, is an unacceptable outcome. All of this noise, all of this confusion, are pieces on a chessboard that will ultimately disguise and confuse the real cause of the next major and most likely global financial crisis, collapse, or reset. Many who were unaffected or minimally affected in the 2008 financial crisis will be affected in the next financial crisis. Think that's an exaggeration? Think again. Each year, various polls are circulated about how much of a financial emergency would be too much for the average person. Here's some headlines. 63% of Americans don't have $500 or $1,000 to cover a financial emergency. 60% of Americans can't cover unexpected expenses. 47% of Americans cannot come up with even $400 for an emergency. A Forbes article last year by Maggie McGrath began by saying, "The car brakes go on the fritz. The refrigerator stops refrigerating. The dog gets his paws on a bag of chocolate chip cookies and earns himself a trip to the emergency vet ER." These are just three of any number of things that could go wrong during the course of the year. Recovering from any one will set you back about $500, which means these scenarios all fall closer to the undesirable inconvenience category than they do the massive calamity one. And yet, nearly two-thirds of Americans do not have enough money in savings to cover the cost of a single one of these unplanned expenses. This is the reality and the making of the next financial crisis. The fallout and ramifications from this one data point are what you need to be preparing for right now. How are you going to help yourself? How can you help others? And if circumstance places you into one of those 6 out of 10 people, who are you going to call at 3 o'clock in the morning? And until next time, this is Robert Ian with ConquerChange.com, reminding you to follow us on Twitter at ConquerChange. Thanks, Chris.
Okay, Robert, thanks for another excellent installment. Well, that wraps up this week's GoldSeek.com radio episode. For two new big guests, be sure to check out next week's show. Until we talk to you again, have a great week.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.